Cat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, UFC 205, DraftKings Picks and Preview. We're not doing a quickie today on the Pat Mayo Hour. We're doing a full Pat Mayo Hour because this is a big card to get to. Cody Safik from the Bookie Beatdown here to give us the lineup so we can win the monies like we do when we play on UFC. Highest ROI game, although football this season has been very, very kind to me.
Has it? That's good to hear. This three-week gap, I was like, oh, poor Pat Mayo. What's he going to do? What are the people's going to do?
I mean, listen, if people have been losing at football, then you know, the MMA will get them back on track. Hopefully our Mexico picks hit in one. We'll see, though. I didn't play a ton.
You're going to say that, but then once they hit, you're going to be like, oh,
damn it.
God damn it.
So the reason I wanted to do a full one for this is, A, I think it's going to be probably the most watched card of the year. Would you disagree with that?
No, it might be the most watched card in a very long time. Certainly one of the best fight cards that they've put together in a very long time.
Yeah, like just the card in general is top to bottom stacked.
It's perfect.
So
It's like the perfect card.
What's the worst fight on this?
The worst fight on this, and this, I'm just going to even play devil's advocate to my own thing, but as a casual bystander, let's say you think the worst fight on this is Caitlin Chookagian versus Liz Carmouche, right? Liz Carmouche headlined a UFC event against Ronda Rousey, the first women fight to headline a pay-per-view ever. It was such a historical moment. If she's the worst fight, with Caitlin Chookagian's a local New Yorker, looked fantastic in her debut, undefeated, pretty girl. If that's the worst fight on the card, you are looking good, and I think this card's fantastic. Now people will complain about, you know, Natal versus Boach. That's a great fight. The whole card's great. I love it.
What was the name again?
Caitlin Chookagian.
Chookagian?
Yeah.
All right, because so for people that don't know and they're just tuning into this because they saw Conor McGregor in the headline and they want to get tuned in.
That's right.
I am not the best with the MMA names, just not great with them. I'm a football guy. But I am good at DraftKings, and that's what I am here for. You're here to lend the expertise on each of the fights. So every time I mispronounce a name, you are going to hear...
You've been dancing around it lately, though, Pat, so this time you got to commit and just go for the names.
That's because we've been doing minis and not full shows, and
true.
I don't want to spend the editing time on.
Yeah, that is true,
I have to go back and put all those in. It's tough.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I mean, it's not so tough as it is time-consuming.
I'll tell you what. If people are watching it for McGregor, and you're a minute and a half in with no McGregor talk, disliked, pal.
Well, let's get into it, then. I can't have
right.
that.
No.
Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez. Conor McGregor is 8,600 on DraftKings. Alvarez, 7,600. McGregor is a minus 160 favorite in this fight. Conor going to win?
If you are looking for a GPP, obviously, you want to make the big money, you're looking for that finish. And when you look at Eddie Alvarez, he's coming off a big first-round finish over Rafael Dos Anjos, the champion, won the belt, spectacular moment. And yes, he's had power-punching abilities earlier on his career, namely when he's competing in Japan. He doesn't really get that finish in the UFC against top-flight competition. I know what I just said, he's coming off a big knockout win, but that one almost surprised a lot of people. He was a heavy dog in that spot. He had to come through and persevere, so to speak. And now, knocking him out, people are not necessarily, damn, Eddie Alvarez's punching power is fantastic. The conversation has now switched to, well, what's RDA's chin like these days, right? So it's a very unforgiving sport. But this guy is one of the best guys. He's gritty. He's a fan favorite. I mean, Robin Black named a scale after him due to his ability to withstand punishment and that desire to come forward. I know why people like Eddie Alvarez. I know why people want to jump behind him and say this guy's the best guy. I totally get it. But if you're looking for a GPP, Conor McGregor has to be the play. He's very well priced, first and foremost.
I mean, he's only $8,600.
Yeah, $8,600.
He's a minus 160 favorite.
He's a minus 160 favorite.
Is that a real line, that minus 160, or is that just because Conor McGregor is he's the Dallas Cowboys of UFC right now?
Well, more than likely. Because
he's overvalued because he's Conor McGregor, regardless of what happens. People are going to show up. People are going to buy this card to watch Conor McGregor. People are going to go to Vegas and put in their bets. They're not putting in their bets on Raquel Pennington. They're putting in bets on Conor McGregor.
They like Conor McGregor. Now, here's the thing with Conor McGregor, too. If I was just to tell you, let's take his namesake out of this. If I was to tell you that the UFC 145-pound champion would be moving up to take on the UFC 155-pound champion, the lightweight wins. That's simple. That's simple. But now you have to start looking at it, whereas it's not that simple. You have two guys that are going to go in there and they're going to exchange wills. And Conor McGregor is as big as Eddie Alvarez is.
And
he's as tall as he is.
He seems
to be almost as thick as he is.
Did McGregor go up to fight Diaz or down?
He went up to 170 pounds. Now, he definitely wasn't a welterweight by no stretch of the imagination. I think 55 is his home. I've been taking flack online because I've been telling people he's never going back to 45. You can't change your body to go to 170, eat steaks for breakfast, live that life, and then be like, yeah, no, I'm going to look like Macaulay Culkin Falcon strung out on heroin at a weigh-in. It doesn't happen that way. So Conor McGregor realizes 45 is probably out of the window. He's always wanted to be a two-divisional champion. The UFC wants him to be a two-divisional champion. They set up the fight with Rafael Dos Anjos, but Rafael Dos Anjos gets hurt. In comes Nate Diaz. Such a great fight, which he loses. You have to do it again. But the plan was always get this guy to challenge for the 55-pound title. Now that it's Eddie Alvarez who's the champ, it's just the logical choice that needs to be made here. When you look at Conor McGregor, he's a GPP dream. Why? Because he almost finishes every single time. I know Max Holloway survived the distance. I know Nate Diaz beat him, and Nate Diaz also survived the distance once as well. But just look at it for what it is. In that first Nate Diaz fight, he drops Nate Diaz with great shots, right? He's hurting him. I had to take that back. The first round, Diaz stays on his feet. But the shots that he's landing on him are the same shots that put down Chad Mendes. They're the same shots that put down Dennis Seaver.
Just Diaz
the
is same too big?
Shots. Yeah, he's just far too big. He's 6'1". He has a cast iron jaw. He's on CBD oil. He probably didn't even feel half of that. But just all jokes aside, the guy is like your quintessential tough man. Like, you cannot just knock this guy out. In that second fight, he's landing those left hands, Pat, and they are dropping Nate Diaz. But Nate Diaz is a zombie. He rises from the dead. I know what people are going to say. Eddie Alvarez is the same way. And you know why they know Eddie Alvarez is the same way? Because Eddie Alvarez has been dropped numerous times in his career. But he always gets back up. He perseveres. He gets up. And he gets on you. And if that moment doesn't happen, imagine your career is, getting up from the dead. That's how this guy fights. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. Minotauro Nogueira used to fight the same way. Get dropped. Get back up. It went away from him. Guys lose it. Tony Ferguson's not getting dropped, but the way he fights, he's going to lose it eventually. I'm not saying Eddie Alvarez has lost it. I'm saying is that his last couple fights, he's not engaging guys the way he used to. His last fight he did, but that's because he got that moment, that rarity where he landed the right hand, and then he had to follow up on it. But he's usually just wrestling a lot. And that just indicates that he's not looking to get damage. He's not looking to get into a firefight. He did against Rafael Dos Anjos because he saw the moment in which his opponent was hurt. But against Conor McGregor, McGregor's a little faster than him. He's definitely sharper than him. He's going to be quicker with his footwork. I'm not saying this is a route. I'm saying we're playing DK and we're looking for finishes. And the chances of Eddie Alvarez scoring the finish against McGregor are not nearly as high as the chances of Conor McGregor landing that Celtic cross and putting him down.
Who do you think wins?
Conor McGregor.
How many rounds?
I would say two.
How does he
win? I'm going to take such flack for that, but I think he knocks him out.
Second round knockout, Conor McGregor?
Yeah,
what a way to end the night. It's at Madison Square Garden, right?
Well, the place would blow the roof off. That's what you want. What you don't want is a crappy Eddie Alvarez holding him up against the cage for five rounds. And Eddie Alvarez has made it clear, like, I don't care about doing that. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to do what I got to do to win.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm not going to lie. He can beat Conor McGregor. For everything I just said about Conor McGregor, let's bring it back for Eddie Alvarez. The fact is that he's going to be better in a five-round situation because he's going to have a better gas tank. McGregor gassed out against Nate Diaz. If he gasses out that same way against Eddie Alvarez, he's in big trouble, man. Big trouble. Also, he had Diaz so hurt that he could take off a couple rounds. I don't know that you can do that against Eddie Alvarez. The thing is, I've watched a lot of Eddie Alvarez fights. I'm not somebody that just started watching him when he signed with the UFC. I watched this guy when he was in Bodog Fight. That's where I first got to learn of him. Then he went to Dream. Then he went to Bellator. He's been dropped many times. Diaz dropped him. Kawajiri's dropped him. Guys drop Eddie Alvarez, but he's so tough. He's so resilient. He comes back. I don't think you want to be coming back in a fight against Conor McGregor, because traditionally, if he puts you down, you're not getting up, unless you're Diaz at 170. That 15 pounds, Pat, that'll make the difference. So I'm going to go with Conor McGregor, I'm going to play that value, and I'm going to put him on my GPP team.
How many guys with the nickname Cowboy on this card?
Just the one. There's only two in the UFC, so we know.
I feel like every week there's
They both fight a lot.
Apparently,
and they fought each other one time.
So you like Donald Cerrone at 8,900 over Gaslam, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Donald Cerrone, once again, if you take this back a couple fights ago, well, you know, Donald Cerrone, is his head in it anymore? He just got smoked for the 55-pound title. 155-pound title, obviously.
Not the 55-pound, he's real fella?
Yeah, well, that's how I talk. Sometimes people are like, what did he just say? But it's like, no, 55, 155, obviously. He got smoked out. People didn't know where his head's at. Guy likes to party. So he moves up to 170. It's like, what's he going to be able to do at 170? And he takes on Cowboy. And he takes him down. And he chokes him out with a topside triangle choke, which is a beauty. It's like, wow, good little performance for him. Now all of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, take on Patrick Cote. Nobody finishes Patrick Cote. Knocks him out. Brilliant. Just brilliant. Knocks him out. It's like, okay, this guy looks pretty decent at 170. Take on Rick Story. Nobody knocks out Rick Story. Knocks him out. Completely knocks him out. So it's like, oh, okay. So now I'm hearing the same things. Dude, nobody knocks out Kelvin Gastelum. It's like, yeah, well, we thought that against his last two opponents, Rick Story and Patrick Cote. This guy's a finisher. He's a potent finisher. And I really start to realize that at 55, he's getting hurt to the body a lot. And I think to myself, the guy likes to party, likes to barbecue, likes to drink his beers. Then all of a sudden, you have to tell yourself, okay, I got to cut all that stuff out of my life, got to cut down. So you're cutting, your body's not reacting well. And so he's tall and he's skinny. The body shots were hurting him ever so much. And I just think that cutting that weight was kind of taking away from him. Now he's at 170. He can live his life a little bit more. Nobody trains harder than the Cowboy. Nobody parties harder than the Cowboy. But nobody trains harder than this guy. He's legit. And I've seen over his last couple of fights that you're seeing that growth. And Donald Cerrone has literally been a live-by-the-confidence, die-by-the-confidence fighter. If he thinks he's going to beat you, he's going to wreck you. If you get into his head, like Nate Diaz did, like Anthony Pettis did, like RDA did, you will break this guy. Now, Khabib's in his head, but he ain't fighting Khabib here. He's fighting Kelvin Gastelum. Kelvin Gastelum's trying to get back to his wrestling roots. Donald Cerrone's wrestling's very improved. He's like a shooting a takedown on a brick wall these days. And if Kelvin Gastelum doesn't take him down, he's going to use that herky-jerky stand-up of his that he uses to try to close the distance. Cerrone's too fast. He's too accurate. And if I thought, well, his punching power is not quite there at 170, it's better at 170, Pat. So I like the Cowboy Donald Cerrone.
You mentioned Khabib. He's on this card, too. He's a minus 300 favorite. What's Shaughnessy up to? Is he just in his glory? Loving Khabib?
Yeah, but it's a tough fight. I'll tell you why. Michael Johnson's hard to take down, too. Michael Johnson is a better striker.
Michael Johnson's
well,
only $7,200.
Yeah, the thing is that, like, I don't think knocking out Khabib is a realistic possibility for anybody, including bears in Russia. And submitting him certainly not probably going to happen either. So you're going to have to settle in for decision.
So
flip side to that.
At best, Johnson wins by decision?
At best. And I also think, conversely, I think if Khabib wins, it's also a decision. So this is one that I don't mind avoiding.
Stay away fight?
Yeah, but if I can make one small point.
Khabib's 23. 3-0? Is that true?
Yeah. Now, some people thought he lost the fight to Gleison Tibau, but if you want to...
What do you mean thought he lost the fight? He either won the fight or he didn't win.
All three judges scored every single round for Khabib. People sitting at home thought he robbed him, so I don't know.
Well, he won the fight, though.
He's never lost a round in the UFC.
Never lost a round?
Not one judge has ever scored a round against him in his entire career in the UFC.
And where's he from?
Russia. Like, he trains in San Jose now.
Yeah, but is he from Russia? Is he from, like, Ukraine? Is he from, like, a satellite state or just Russia?
Dagestan.
Where?
Dagestan.
Where's Dagestan?
You know where Dagestan is? Right by Chechnya.
Well, Chechnya is not actually a real country.
Oh, yeah, it is.
I believe it's just somewhere
Russia. Kadyrov's the president.
No, okay.
Yeah, after his dad got blown up at a soccer stadium where they actually put the bomb in the post. Blow up, took him out. Younger kid ends up, actually, I think he's not even the oldest kid. But anyways, he comes in, takes the spot. I love these guys, man. Guys from that Caucasus region, these guys are the best, man. They don't know anything better. You try to tell some Canadian kid, hey, man, I'm going to give you $500 and you can sleep on a floor for a month and fight grown men. Ain't going to happen. These guys strive on that. They're the best. One little cool little tidbit I have about Khabib here and why he's going to be a lot better to have on DK now is that he once fought a guy by the name of Abel Trujillo. Abel Trujillo is actually a training partner of Michael Johnson's. Abel Trujillo was a former junior college wrestling All-American, someone with good wrestling abilities, real big and real thick. Khabib took him down 21 times. It was a UFC record. It has never been even rivaled. And he had a broken foot the entire time. So afterwards, he was like, I couldn't hold him down because of my broken foot. So he would get up. I would just take him back down. What would 21 takedowns score under the new format so much? Before, you weren't getting as much, but...
Now you're getting tons of points.
Yes, he positionally dominates guys. So Khabib's a good play, but I don't think I can fit him into my lineup personally.
He's expensive. He's $9,000.
Exactly. And Michael Johnson's someone you can't write off. He's actually made a career of people writing him off and him coming through in the biggest moments. So don't go down that road with Michael Johnson.
Well, the last two times that we've done the show before the hiatus, you had the bottom price person on the card and both times they won. Is there anyone like that down at the bottom this time?
We're going to have to go with that because 100% you're never going to get six people you think are going to win easy. You got to take a bit of risk. I think I'm very fortunate to have some of these bottom feeder guys here because starting out with expensive
one. You don't
seem
to have any bottom feeder guys, though. It seems like a very balanced lineup. Like Romero is the cheapest guy you have.
Yeah.
He's $7,700. $7,700 isn't like bottom of the barrel. Like,
no.
Who was that dude who was 68 and won in like 10 seconds? What was that guy's name?
Brandon Moreno.
Yeah. But like, we're not going to that level of scrub. Or is there just not that level of scrub on this card?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, right? When I was looking at the bottom end people, right, it's just none of them really jumped off at me.
Jeremy Stevens is $7,000.
Yeah, and so Frankie Edgar, how do you put this guy away?
Carolina.
Kowalkiewicz.
Kowalkiewicz.
I would never bet against Joanna. She's my baby. Everybody knows that. I've made a copious amount of money on her because I've bet her every single fight in her UFC career. She was dog twice, and she's coming in the office. So
yeah, on Monday.
I never mark out for people, but I am marking out for her 100%.
But 6,900 is the lowest on this, and 7,700 is where you're going with Romero.
Yeah, so here's the thing with Romero. If you were just to ask me straight up, who do you like? I like Weidman. Weidman's the former champion. Weidman's got that winner mentality. He's got the better gas tank. So he's going to be able to take Romero into deep water. Romero is just the most athletic guy in the UFC, right? He wrestled at the Olympics. I believe a silver medalist. He wrestled Dan Gable and beat the guy. He's the man. Sorry, Kale Sanderson. He's the man. This guy is one of the best wrestlers to come to the UFC in a very long time. And he uses that athleticism, that explosiveness, everything. Works on his striking. His ability to, like, you know, most guys are their jab, jab, straight right. But you get a gauge of their speed. This guy masks his speed. Because some of his punches come slow, and then they snap. Some of his come quick. It's like his ability to change up his rhythm is second to none. Problem is, he's an old man. He's 38 years old, and if you ask people who know him back from his time in Cuba, he's a little older than that. So even though he's in such supremely good shape, there's always that question of, well, when's it going to catch up to him? And it maybe did. Test positive for steroids. But then he appeals it, right? He beats Jacare. He appeals this, I didn't do steroids. And they go and they test the supplement in which he said he gave. You have to, if you want to claim that I didn't know it was in my supplement, you have to give them your supplements with the barcode and everything.
Yeah.
They check the batches and they may find a contamination that would exonerate you. They found a contamination that exonerated him. So he's off. But I mean, just look at the guy. He's gigantic. He's gigantic. I really see this fight being that Chris Weidman is not the better wrestler, but he's got the better cardio. And what we saw with Yoel Romero when he took on Jacare, he's infinitely better wrestler than Jacare. So two of the judges thought he won that winning rounds one and two. I had to disagree with them. I thought Jacare won two and three and should have been given the nod.
Unfortunately, your opinion doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter whatsoever. This guy lands a spinning back fist on Jacare Souza, drops him, gets on top of him, pounds him, seems to be close to a finish. So a lot of guys gave that a 10-8. Unfortunately, second round, Yoel Romero, and this is where the biggest issue with him is. At 38 years old, and if you talk to people who know him back from his time in Cuba, he might even be a little bit older than that, Pat. He's got to slow down at some point. And we've seen that his last fight, he pops through USADA. All of a sudden, you know, it's a red flag. Oh, nope, our bad. Didn't mean it was a contaminated supplement. Now he's back in the spot. But we still get what we saw against Jacare. What we saw against Jacare is he used an abundance of energy early on in the fight. He started to fatigue. Now, Jacare Souza is not the same kind of wrestler Chris Weidman is. But let's just say, for the sake of anything, Jacare Souza, decent wrestler, not nearly on the level of Yoel. But Yoel's gas tank is now running on empty. So Jacare shoots his takedown, and the cheating son of a bitch, and I don't mean that because of steroids, I mean that because of the not getting off your stool against Tim Kennedy and the massive amounts of, you know, everything this guy does, okay? He grabs the cage. He grabs the cage, and that allows him to get on top. So the ref's like, hey, man, what are you doing? Can't grab the cage. Fight resumes. Third round, Jacare shoots a takedown, gets him down again. This guy's not even trying to sprawl out the takedown. Back against the cage, he just lets it happen. He sucks out his hips, gets on top of him because he's getting tired. I look at Chris Weidman. I think he's a better wrestler. He's a gamer. He's a guy that's been.
But we're taking Romero?
We're taking Yoel Romero because it's a GPP play here. And here's the thing with Chris Weidman. Chris Weidman's been to the highest heights. He's been there. He's done that. Unfortunately, the guy loses his belt. He loses to Luke Rockhold. And then what has Chris Weidman done in the time since then? He got a new type of neck surgery where they put plastic discs in it, okay? That's rough, man. And now you got to look at the fact that he seems to be, oh, he's a good striker. Is he a good striker? He knocked out Anderson Silva. That's the claim to fame. You'll never be able to take that away from him. But does that really mean that he's as adequate as a striker as some other guys? When we see him against Luke Rockhold, he seemed to get chewed up. When we see him against Lyoto Machida, he didn't really seem to be leaps and bounds like some great type of striker. In fact, he had a trouble in some of those rounds against Lyoto Machida.
So basically, that if Romero wins, he's going to win early. If not, he's going to lose horribly.
Yoel Romero is capable of... No. If he loses,
really?
If he loses, he's going late into the fight, tiring out and getting choked out. If he wins the fight, he's going to win in spectacular fashion. And let's just throw some MMA math in there just for the fun of it. Lyoto Machida fought Chris Weidman for the UFC 185-pound title. Okay, the fight went 5 hard rounds. Lyoto Machida certainly won one of those 5 rounds. Some people think he won 2 of those rounds. But no matter what, even the rounds he lost, Pat, was a very competitive fight. Yoel Romero fought Lyoto Machida and trounced him. Knocked him completely senseless. Well, this is now going back, say, a year and a bit ago. But
not so long ago that
it wasn't 5 years ago. I'll certainly tell you that. Now people are starting to say, well, Lyoto Machida is not what he used to be. And Yoel Romero was able to capitalize on that. It's like Yoel Romero did stuff to him that no one had done except for maybe Luke Rockhold. But he's so explosive. He's so athletic. Now you look at the Jacare fight. How many times has Jacare been knocked out? What, George Pitino knocked him out back in the day. Mayhem kind of got that cut one over on him. But for the most part, Jacare's got a granite chin, you know? He's a very tough guy. And Yoel Romero drops him with a spinning back fist that nobody saw coming. Derek Brunson, top 8, 185-pound contender. He knocks him out senseless in the third round. Tim Kennedy, top 185-pound contender. One of the most durable people on the planet. This guy routinely invites ISIS to come get some on Twitter because he's a Green Beret who has no fear of death. Yoel Romero knocks him out. Yoel Romero is very capable of knocking out any man. So when I look at this fight, I think, okay, Yoel Romero's going to be in good shape. It's a big fight opportunity, and he's competed not so long ago. Now you look at Chris Weidman, he's coming off neck surgery, hasn't fought in over a year, is going to have some ring rust, dealing with the pressure being at home. This is only a 3-round fight, not a 5-round fight. 5 rounds would play better for him because of the cardio conditioning, and it's not going to be available for him. So if Yoel Romero goes out there and wins 2 rounds and simply survives, he gets the win. But his ability to finish a fight and knock a guy out means $7,700. How could you not take that play?
Well, here's sort of the thing, too. And, I mean, 85 is not a ton for Chris Weidman either, but what I've noticed on DraftKings, they've opened up a lot of big games for this card.
This is a massive card.
A lot of people are interested in this card. Yes. A lot of first-time people are going to be playing DraftKings just to get on MMA.
They'll take Chris Weidman.
In states where you can't gamble, they're like, oh, let me throw together a DraftKings lineup. And people will take Chris Weidman because on this card, when I look up and down, I mean, who are the most famous guys on this card that your casual fan would know that is probably tuning into this card? Conor McGregor, obviously number one.
Frankie Edgar, Chris Weidman.
Rashad Evans and Chris Weidman.
Here's the thing. You picked a bad card because it's so good. There's so many marquee fights.
But Weidman's one of the marquee names on this.
Because he's a former champion.
Yes, he beat George St. Pierre, didn't he?
No, he beat Anderson Silva.
Who was going to beat George St. Pierre?
Matt Serra. That was a long time.
But who was it? Did Weidman fight? Didn't George St. Pierre fight Chris Weidman? Who was the guy that fought George St. Pierre and everyone said he won, but they gave the match to George?
Listen, let me tell you something. Johnny Hendricks lost three rounds to two, man. Simple math. He lost 3 rounds to 2. That's the thing. It's a megastar, right? You beat a megastar, you become this big
megastar.
Star. You steal some of their aura. In this case, he goes out and he knocks out the Michael Jordan of MMA, and then after that, he breaks the guy's leg. So you'd think he'd be over so much. The problem is that the fans didn't really rally behind him in terms of, yes, the fans love him, but when you're looking at a global superstar, when you're looking at a Ronda Rousey, when you're looking at a Brock Lesnar, when you're looking at a Conor McGregor, Chris Weidman was never that guy. And you know what? No shame in that. Jon Jones is not a megastar either. And he's the best fighter who's ever competed in MMA. So it's just the fans have got to be able to jump on something. CM Punk's a bigger star than Chris Weidman. Those are the cold, hard facts, right? And it kills me to say that. But Chris Weidman knows now, okay, I'm getting a little bit older now. That glory that I had against Anderson Silva, that's a couple years back now. I got a bad neck. I've been wrestling for a long time. My body's starting to shut down on me a little bit. I opened up my own gym. I got family. I got kids. That's a lot of shit to have on your plate, man. Now, you've been trying to actively get MMA legal in New York for a very long time. You've been wearing this business suit. You've been going to
the
meetings.
Is that why he's on this card?
Hands. Yeah, a lot of New York guys are on the card. But, I mean, he's obviously one of the big New
York stars.
But
is he on this card because he was influential in getting it done?
Quite a few guys that were influential in getting it done are actually not on the card, but Chris Weidman being a champion, especially when he was campaigning, he was the champion at the time. There's someone that you're going to market and you're going to get behind. It's funny because when Toronto was campaigning to get it legal in Ontario,
Ontario. 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
2010,
six years ago.
We were using Miguel Torres to try to like, I was like, what? But that's the times, right? Now, I'm not saying Weidman's old by no means. He's a lot younger than Yoel Romero. I just mean, at this point, you got to think that certain guys are willing to die in the ring, right? That's a brute point. And
you think that he's past that point of his career?
I think at this point in his career, he knows that his neck's bummed
out.
No. And then my last point I'm going to make on this one, you go and you watch top 5 media day moments from Yoel Romero's last fight, okay? Top 5 media day moments. You can find it on YouTube right now, bud. He's like number 2 or number 1, and he's speaking in Spanish, this is his native language, and he starts crying, Pat. And he says, when you have family, you have to be willing to sacrifice your life and die. And he's crying. And I was like, holy shit, this guy's a crazy person. And you do not want to go against him. He goes out there, he gets that win. He's honestly, this is who he is. He is a competitor of the highest nature. And as I started this, I think Chris Weidman has the goods to get the win because of that ability to take it into deep waters. But we were playing DK, and we were going against the grain. The grain would suggest that Chris Weidman's going to get the win. Yoel Romero is extremely capable of pulling off the upset. He's going to be in better physical shape considering he didn't have a disc put in his neck.
And no one's going to take
it. He's got a shot. and very few people are going to take him.
What's the quick knockout on this card? Is there one that just jumps out and be like, oh, we have to have that guy. That guy's going to finish in the first round. Or woman.
Yeah, I'm not going to say there's a quick knockout. The two fastest knockouts I do see happening was I do think Conor McGregor has that ability to score that first or second round knockout. When I look at the card, I think Donald Cerrone is going to probably get a third round stoppage. The other person I like drawing a blank here, Thompson, the champion. Greatest.
Stephen Thompson?
Why did I just draw a blank there? Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, okay? This guy he's so dynamic in his footwork. Thing is when you look at it in other performances, right, he can just outclass guys flat out simple. And you want to talk about his own fight with Johnny Hendricks, the guy that supposedly beat Georges St. Pierre. He murdered him. He completely killed him. He knocked him out in the first round. That is something that you do not do to Johnny Hendricks, is just completely thrash him. But yet he's able to go out there and do that. He's on another level. This guy is undefeated in, I'm going to say he's undefeated in kickboxing bouts, because his only loss is to Raymond Daniels, and it was in a Chuck Norris's World Combat League match that he actually busted his own knee trying to move forward. Not a win by no stretch of the imagination for Raymond Daniels. It got documented as this. But this guy's perfect. Now, you take that perfect career in kickboxing, right? Point karate. You take that perfect career path, and you bring it to the UFC. The guy's once beaten in the UFC. His one loss is to Matt Brown. He basically KO'd Matt Brown twice in that fight, and if it wasn't for Matt Brown, he's literally called the Immortal, he would have won. He beats most guys. Now I look at him now, and he's really becoming championship material. He's 33 years old, getting a little bit older, but being that he comes from that karate background, what's the one thing that karate practitioners stress? Don't take damage, you know? It's the beautiful art. It's the push and pull, the moving in and the beating this guy. And in his case, it's so unbelievably hard to hit him that the guys just can't catch up to him. So Rory McDonald, we're going to take the best Canadian guy, a guy that's near indestructible. His ability to take damage is second to none. He's a good striker.
Whatever happened to Rory McDonald?
Stephen Thompson beat his ass down for 5 rounds, and the UFC cut him. They didn't cut him. His contract came up, and the UFC opted not to resign him, so he signed with Bellator.
Okay.
Stephen Thompson just ran out the second greatest Canadian he's probably ever competed. Third greatest Canadian, considering Brock Lesnar is one of ours now. But what I'm saying is that Stephen Thompson is on a whole other level. Tyron Woodley, you can't disrespect this guy. He's the champion for a reason. And this is one of the rare cases, Pat, that Tyron Woodley is the champion. And the challenger is the favorite.
Yeah, I was going to say, how often do you see the champion as a +170 underdog and the challenger as a 2-1 favorite?
Crazy. I mean, Conor McGregor is the favorite over the 155-pound champion as well.
Yeah,
so.
But he is a champion as himself.
Yeah, but he's moving up a weight class.
But again, we talked about Conor's odds are always going to be inflated towards him. You're never going to get a true line with him because people are going to bet him regardless of what his odds are.
Yeah, but you know, it's just a funny thing I think to myself a lot. I think, okay, you know what? Pound for pound, which means weight doesn't matter. Just look for skill, look for record, look for everything they've done. One of the greatest mixed martial artists currently, and maybe of all times, Demetrius Johnson, 125-pound champ. This guy is pristine. He's so good, Pat. There's no challenges. They're basically going to kill his division because there's nobody for. They have a reality show going right now where hopefully someone's good enough to take on Demetrius Johnson. If Demetrius Johnson moves up the one weight class, the 10 pounds, he's now a 35er. He would have to take on Dominic Cruz. These guys have already fought. Dominic Cruz beat his ass down. He went to 25 because he couldn't hang with Cruz at 35. Now you move Cruz up one weight class and he takes on a McGregor or a Jose Aldo. He ain't favored there. You move those guys up. What I'm getting at here is the welterweight champ can't beat the middleweight champ. The middleweight champ can't beat the light heavyweight champ. The light heavyweight champ, John Jones, probably not beating Stipe, although that would be very interesting to me because the guy's so damn good. But he's on cocaine most of the time.
He is. I wonder if he's still on the cocaine.
They're looking to clear him to come back. This would have been his card.
Oh,
he's
for sure.
From New York, right? He's like Ithaca, New York or something. This is perfect.
But McGregor went up, what, 2 weight classes last time?
Yes, but he wasn't taking on the champion.
He held his own against a guy that was, what, 25 pounds heavier than him?
Yeah, and a guy that had won one of his last 4 fights. Right? So the fact of the matter is he was supposed to take on Rafael Dos Anjos. Rafael Dos Anjos got hurt, and they were like, shit, we need someone on a short notice replacement that is going to make Conor look good. And they thought Nate Diaz would be that guy. Unfortunately, they didn't factor in Nate Diaz is a very tough dude who had no, he was not thinking of taking a rollover in that fight. He was showing up to beat Conor McGregor, and he did so. In the second fight, he gave him the exact same
fight. Okay, well, let me ask you this then about McGregor.
Yes.
Is McGregor one of the best fighters ever in UFC?
Very early to say that, and you're going to take a lot of flack from people who don't like him to say yes, but he's one of the greatest 145-pound champions of all time. Jose Aldo's still the best. This guy knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds.
Is he like a generational type fighter?
Yeah.
Like, is he as good as Anderson Silva was when Anderson Silva was in his prime?
Anderson Silva had a big body of work, man. And here's the thing.
But, like, he was indestructible for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like,
but
years.
But, and I'm so guilty of doing this.
Is McGregor as good as St. Pierre when St. Pierre was at his peak?
Well, it's so – it's not non-comparable. I'll tell you why. When you look at George St. Pierre at the time, he's killing everybody. When you look at him in hindsight, oh, he fought John Fitch and Josh Koscheck and Thiago Alves and Dan Hardy. Oh, none of those guys are ever going to be remembered as some of the best ever. Matt Hughes will be. But those guys will never be remembered as some of the greatest ever. When you look at Anderson Silva, it's like, oh, man, that he smashed, you know, Chris Lieben and Rich Franklin and Stephen Bonner and James Irvin.
Stephen Bonner.
Your guy.
My guy.
Yeah. None of the greatest ever, right? Rich Franklin should go down as one of the best middleweights, but he won't. You get this aura of invincibility because you're beating guys, but unfortunately they're not up to snuff. When you look back on Conor McGregor's career, you'll be able to say, Marcus Brimage and Diego Brandão, Dennis Seaver, but you could never take away that Jose Aldo fight from him. And you can discredit Chad Mendes, but you could never take away that Max Holloway win from him as well. So he's developing into one of the greatest evers. But you can't just give someone a tag because they go out there and knock a couple guys out. That's something that you need to stick around the sport for 5 years,
defend
your belt.
The reason I ask the question is, if he is one of these guys that could become a generational type fighter, then moving up 10 pounds shouldn't be a problem for him.
Conor McGregor has won 4 world titles in his career, okay? He won 2 Cage Warriors title at 145 and 155, and he's won, 3 titles. If he wins Eddie Alvarez, it'll be his 4th title, okay? Out of all the titles he's won, Pat, he has never defended a title ever. He won the 145-pound title in Cage Warriors and did the same thing. I want to fight the 55. So he went to 55, didn't defend the 45-pound title, won the 55-pound title, and then signed with the UFC. So didn't defend either of them. Now he wins against Jose Aldo. But instead of defending it, he takes 2 fights against Nate Diaz. Now he's fighting for the 55-pound title. And if he wins, he's not going back down to 45, man. So what I'm getting at is, how could you be one of the greatest ever when you didn't defend your title? George defended his title. Anderson defended his title. Rousey defended her title. You can laugh at Rousey for getting booted in the head, but she's going to go down as one of the greatest ever, and rightfully so. And those other guys will rightfully so. And to be honest, McGregor will. But not right now. Down the road. He still does have some proving to do.
Does he have to win this fight?
Of course, yes. If he wins, he's the first ever guy to hold both titles at the same time.
No one's ever held 2 titles at the same time?
At the same time. Randy Couture held the light heavyweight and heavyweight title. BJ Penn held the welterweight and lightweight title. Never at the same time. So it's a history-making thing. And this is a history-making card. It's gigantic. He's a marquee guy. I get for cheering for the Philly homeboy, Eddie Alvarez. I totally get it. I really do. And how could you not be a fan of his, especially his fight style? But the fact of the matter is that, yeah, you're looking at a once-in-a-generation guy in Conor McGregor that people just love to say, well, he talks so much shit. He's like Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen had 14 fights, bro, like, or 14 losses. Guy been fighting since 1997. He had his first fight in 1997. The game's changed. McGregor is a talented guy who can talk. He's athletic. He's fast. He's quick with his tongue. I don't know how he's good with his money, so hopefully he's not on a 30-for-30 down the road with,
The John Daly 30-for-30 is followed by the rise and fall of Conor McGregor.
Yeah, knock on wood for his sake, but, you know, it's certainly possible when you're throwing money around like that.
Is there any fight on this card that you just think is going to be fun? Like, you're excited to watch. It might not be a great fight, but, like, you're pumped for it.
Vicente Luque versus Bilal Muhammad. And okay, we're going with Vicente Luque here. Bilal Muhammad's had 2 fights in the UFC now, and both of them were great times, man. First time, he was training during Ramadan. So he took the fight during Ramadan, and obviously you're not able to
eat fasting.
Drink. He was fasting. He wasn't drinking between sunset and sundown. Is that how it works?
Pat Mayo, Ramadan expert.
Yoel Romero is a Ramadan expert. This guy is beast, and when you see him in Titan FC, he was the champ for Titan FC, and then he routinely goes the distance, not finishing guys. So if you're looking for a cash game play, a good cash game play, not a good GPP play. Now he makes his debut in the UFC, and he gets the best looking guy in the division, Alan Joban, the Versace model, and he gets, you know, more or less chewed up pretty bad. But you see so much in this guy, and that, like, his durability is there, his awareness is there, He's got all the tools. He does have to make some improvements in some areas, but he's a pressure fighter. He keeps coming forward, and the longer the fight goes, the better he is. But now that he's not the Titan FC champ anymore, he's in the UFC, he's regulated to 3-round affairs, right? So being able to take guys into deep waters, that's not going to help him. And he had finished, like, one of his 6 opponents in Titan FC, and it was a 4th-round stoppage. So that's not available to you in the UFC. Vicente Luque was on The Ultimate Fighter, Black Zillion guy, ended up not winning the show, but had a fantastic performance. in the finale. Oh, he lost to Michael Graves in the finale. Got a matchup with the finalist, Hayder Hassan, and looked fantastic against Hayder Hassan. Then he comes out against Alvaro, looks fantastic. The guy's making improvements every time. He's young. He's a brown belt in BJJ. I believe he's a black belt in judo. His striking's getting better every single time. I honestly think that Bilal Muhammad's forward pressure can break a pretty boy like this, you know? Get gritty with him. Put him up against the cage. Throw your technique. Just physically wear on the guy and break him. But with only a three-round fight, he's a slow starter. He needs a little bit of time to get going. And against Joban, as he was trying to get going, he was getting slaughtered with massive strikes. And now your conditioning's great, but your head's fuzzy, and you're wobbly a little bit, and now you're not throwing the same type of offense. Luque has been improving every single fight, and I think he could still land those same shots, so this is a very tough fight. On a straight betting line perspective, you'd probably want to pass it.
There's
but
no
we're going for the GPP, baby.
I don't even see odds on this. It's NA on my sheet.
Oh, yeah.
What were they when you last saw it?
I think it was like minus 140 for Bilal Muhammad, I believe it was.
Okay.
But regardless, I think it's a super close fight. When I look at Muhammad, I'm like, okay, this guy's going to be good. He's going to make a lot of improvements, and he's going to be someone to keep your eye out on for. But his punching defense, his ability to physically parry and block punches, doesn't seem to be all there. And when I look at Luque and I see his vicious assault, both standing but also on the ground, if he grabs you in a darce or anaconda on the ground, he will choke you out. Those are the moves he likes to go to. Those are essentially his patented go-to moves. And I think he's very versatile. So certainly when I look at that price tag at $7,900, I need to save a little bit of money. This guy's a potent finisher. We're going for the play on the GPP. And this is, like you said, what's an exciting fight? This is an exciting fight.
For people who are new to DraftKings, some of the tricks that you can do in order to score very highly and win some of these giant tournaments, obviously the most important thing to find is a first-round knockout that scores the most points. Although now with the new scoring, you can pile up points in other ways, but that's still the best bet to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to do in terms of research, besides listening to people who know about them, and one of the things that I like to do is just to look at the odds, the Vegas odds, and compare them to the DraftKings pricing, and this one sticks out to me. It's like 80-time French Open winner, Rafael Nadal. He's taking on Tim Bausch.
Tim Bausch, the barbarian.
Like a Bausch, but he's a minus 160 favorite, Nadal, and he's only $8,100. Bausch, same price. So it would just lead me to believe that you want to take Rafael Nadal.
No, see, I'll tell you why my reasoning on why it's the same, right? Rafael Nadal is the better fighter. He should be the favorite. He's seemingly better on the ground. He's the Muay Thai coach at Henzo Gracie's Academy in New York. Lives and trains in New York, from the area, and a guy that's fought, you know, top-level guys and fared pretty good for the most part. Black belt in BJJ, very versatile guy.
Beat Roger Federer a bunch.
Knocked out Travis Luter, who's my boy, okay? So Rafael Nadal can be good in spots, okay? He's a better fighter. Thing is with Tim Bausch, the guy's got knockout power of 4 days. So you can never discredit that. Even if he's losing a fight, he can just knock you out.
He's one-punched him?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at classic fight was the one against Yushin Okami, where he's down two rounds. His coach comes in the ring, Matt Hume, essentially just tells him, all right, dude, you need to knock him out. Tim, go out there and knock him out, Tim. Tim goes out and knocks the guy out. Massive upset in Japan. Japanese fighter, legendary Japanese fighter. Huge. Now he fights Brad Tavares. It's like, oh, dude, Tim is just way too slow to hang with Brad Tavares. He's a lot sharper. He's a lot more technical. Brad Tavares wins the first round. Tim connects and knocks him out in the third round. Or second round. Then he gets Josh Samana's last time out. Josh Samana is a slick grappler. Very versatile guy. Guy is fast. He was seemingly going to have a speed advantage on him. And seemingly, if he could get Tim Bausch to the ground, he was going to choke him out. Tim Bausch is a black belt in judo. They call it, like, hillbilly judo. And it's tough, man. You can't get this guy down for the most part. If you're an elite-level wrestler, sure. But most guys can't get him down. And Samana can't get him down. And then, unfortunately, he ends up finishing Samana. So Tim Bausch is a guy that, even though he's not the better fighter, he routinely beats the better fighter using that knockout power. Rafael Nadal's getting older. He's very stagnant. His takedowns are not great by no means. He's not likely to get Tim Bausch down. So if he can't get Tim Bausch down, he's going to have to strike with him the whole time. There's that inherent chance that Tim Bausch does what Tim Bausch does and knock him out. The reason why I took Rafael Nadal here. Versatility. He's the black belt on the ground. If the fight does hit the ground, he should be able to submit him. Tim Bausch has spots. You know, he lost to Dan Henderson. He's 46 years old. He got punched out in less than a minute. But then he's able to rebound. He's a career rebound guy. He talked on Ed Herman at 205, knocked out. When has Ed Herman knocked out anybody? But he knocked out Tim Boach. So now people are thinking, oh, his chin's going. Mark Munoz smashes him. Everyone that's really getting a part of him is smashing him. And then he fights lower echelon guys. Now he gets that lower echelon guy. But as I mentioned, Rafael Natal's going to have that versatility. He's fighting at New York. He's fighting in New York, I should say. And I just think that he's a little more well-rounded than one Tim Boach. And Tim Boach really has to rely on the fact that I'm just going to land that one punch. My final point on it, I won't disclose the fighter's name, but I know a guy who fought in the same card as Tim Boach and was like, I didn't know what to say when he was like hitting mitts in the back. Like, he's hands down the worst guy I've ever seen in my life. But guy's a big old barbarian who, if he lands that shot, he puts you down. He's not very technical. He's brute. He's strong. I'm sure he's improving, but he's 37 years old, so how much better could he really be getting? Rafael Natal is not no spring chicken himself, but he's more well-rounded. If you want to play a couple lineups, not a bad move to put Boach on some other ones, but yeah, I decided to go with Natal.
Yeah, if you play multiple lineups, and it's a very easy swap since it's the same price,
yeah.
You might even want to take similar lineups, like the lineup that you're giving out here that has Natal on it. If you play another one, just make that swap and just have both.
Yeah, and especially.
Then you hedge for yourself.
But if it's clay court, you do not want to go against Natal on the clay court.
Ever.
Never.
Misha Tate versus Raquel Pennington. Any real thoughts here? Like, is Tate going to win this? She's a minus 175 favorite.
Yeah, so remember how you were saying earlier, like, oh, you know, like casual fans, and they're going to be big $3, $150,000 contests. And people are going to be. And who are some of the people that they're going to go for? They're going to go for Misha Tate.
Why?
Because she's a megastar. She never beat Ronda Rousey, but she beat Holly Holm, the girl that beat Ronda Rousey, which got her the title.
Yeah, but
she's pretty.
I don't feel like Misha Tate or Holly Holm are stars.
You know
like
what?
They were people.
I think when you're hanging out courtside at a Lakers game with Jimmy Kimmel, that's you're over. You're a star.
Sure,
you're
but they're no Rousey in terms of like star power.
No, she's the best. She's the best. But if you want to think to yourself, who are the biggest, most popular women in the history of MMA? Ronda Rousey's the number one. Misha Tate is the clear cut number two.
Okay.
Holly Holm probably hanging around that number three. Everybody else, the current champion Amanda Nunes, she's not even as big of a star as them. And yeah, she just beat Misha Tate. People still like Misha Tate. Very pretty girl. You know, you go on Instagram or whatever social media outlet you use, and you see her dressed up as Halloween. And it's got 100,000 likes, and people like this girl. They gravitate towards her. She's a gamer.
Is she going to win?
Here's my theory on this one. I've never been overly impressed with Misha Tate. When she fought Liz Carmouche, I didn't think, you know, it was particularly a great fight. When she took on Sarah McMahon, I thought she probably lost the fight. Guillotine saves her in the second round because they give her the second round.
Why aren't we taking Raquel Pennington?
Raquel Pennington's not going to finish her.
It's only $7,100. A win by decision would be good enough.
Well, it's going to be a close fight. The biggest thing is I think Misha Tate struggles against her. So can Misha Tate beat her? Yes, she can beat her. Raquel Pennington did not look good against Elizabeth Phillips. I repeat, did not. And when you look at Misha Tate, it's like she's infinitely better. So you're jumping up. It's a class jump. And sometimes, just like in horse racing, horse is killing it. Horse is the best. Let's jump him up a class. He wasn't as good as we thought we were. He was. Misha Tate's good, but when she fights the top echelon fighters, she's got to come back. She's not going out there and smoking anybody. Her fight with Holly Holm, she's losing. She needs to get that fifth round finish or she's losing that fight and the fairy tale's done. She fought Ronda twice, lost both of them.
Quickly, didn't she?
Yeah, and when she fought Jessica Eye, I mean, it wasn't the sexiest performance in terms of you're on paper so much better than someone with your wrestling and you can't take them down. Now, the Amanda Nunes fight, she couldn't even come anywhere. She couldn't even get a sniff of that takedown, man, like nothing. And as a result, she has to stand. She gets bopped up and she gets knocked out. That's a bad spot. Raquel Pennington is a very tough girl, and she's hard to take down for the most part, and she's got good technical boxing. This is a girl that fought Holly Holm as well, and the fight stood standing the whole time. Raquel gave her a go. Loss. It wasn't the greatest performance from her part, but she gave her a go, and she landed a couple shots here and there. So Raquel Pennington's a tough girl, but this, to me, just screams the type of fight that at the end of it, nobody scores many points. So I'm just going to stay clear of it. If you're going to play multiple lineups and you want to take a cheap player, like you said, a Brandon Moreno, but you want to take someone cheap so you can afford everything else, not a bad pick for Raquel Pennington. But this is going to be a close fight. Misha Tate is rightfully so the favorite.
What about the other female fights?
Caitlin Chookaghi and Liz Carmouche. So Liz Carmouche, as I mentioned, she fought Ronda Rousey as well. She's a very tough girl. And she's just had like a lot of time on the sideline. I mean, I think coming into the UFC, she was viewed as one of the top contenders. She loses to Ronda Rousey in a fight that she had given Ronda, till that point, the best fight of her career. Took her back, tried to sink in the hooks, tried to go for the submission. Gets like a nasty neck crank on Ronda, but unfortunately it wasn't to be. Every moment after that seemed to be a tread downwards. But there's one thing that this girl has. It's a massive amount of power. She will push you up against the cage. She'll get a hold of you. She'll rip you up and she'll slam you. Caitlin Chookaghi, and she works out with the same team.
Undefeated, it says.
Yeah, undefeated.
on my sheet.
And she works out with the same team that's produced Edson Barboza and produced Frankie Edgar and produced Eddie Alvarez. She works out with some of the best men and a coaching staff that's used to high-level championship material. So obviously, her being undefeated, her coming from that Ring of Combat pedigree, her always having people behind her and support her, she's kind of over to be a big star. So she makes her UFC debut, and she does look good. She's the dog in that situation. She comes in. She gets the win. I'm super happy. I better as the dog. Paul Shaughnessy better as the dog. Everyone's happy. But now you move into a fight with a veteran former contender, a girl that's fought the highest upper echelon. You're in a card in New York. All this pressure is getting to you. Is Caitlin Chookagian that much better? No. And she's the favorite, and that shocked me.
According to the odds, she's a big favorite. She's minus 175.
I didn't understand that. But once again, when I look at this fight, I think to myself, if Caitlin's going to win, she's just going to pick her apart standing. And it's not going to be very pretty because Liz Carmucci is not just going to stand in front of you. She's going to try to pressure for the takedown. If Caitlin loses, Liz Carmucci is going to get her down, and she's not going to pass. She'll just get her down quite simply. She'll get a slam. She'll hold her down. This also screams a fight that is not super high scoring. And when I look at the price points on that and I think to myself, yo, Romero's only $7,700. I kind of want to go in that direction. Unfortunately, someone's obviously going to play a Liz Carmouche. Liz Carmouche, the other girl will break her ankle. And then, you know, that's just the way these things go. But you can only try to forecast it as much as you have information for and what you can prepare for. And when I look at those two fights, when I look at tape on it, the women are supremely talented, but I'm not fully sold. I will give you one tidbit here. You could go against Joanna and Jacek on a cash game.
Why?
Because Karolina Kowalkiewicz has 5-round cardio like you would not believe. Also, she's Polish. She's tough. They're both Polish. They're both really tough. So the thing with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, everybody knows she's a supreme striker, but if you look at her last couple of fights with Claudia Gadela, she hits Claudia Gadela with 5 million punches. And Claudia Gadela takes the punches. She doesn't go down. And her fight before that, Valerie Letourneau takes the entire beating for the 5 rounds. Doesn't go down. Her fight with Jessica Penne has been knocked down in the first round since. But, you know, Jessica Penne can go 4 rounds against this girl. So she's 115 pounds, and she doesn't have the punching power. She has the punching aptitude. She'll throw so many strikes.
So you think this goes 5 rounds, what you're saying?
I'm thinking if it doesn't go 5 rounds, it goes near 5 rounds. And one thing I have to say about Karolina Kowalkiewicz is that she never tires. She fought Inoue in Invicta FC, and it was thrilling how much gas tank this girl has. And you look at her performances since then, especially in the UFC, she's breaking girls with her cardio. She just doesn't tire. So she might fight very talented girls, and they might give her a go. But at some point or another, they get tired. Joanna won't get tired. But this girl will hang around long enough to get points.
So if you say that you can do that and you can throw her on a cash game, who of the top-end guys that you'd now be able to afford would you put on your team? Is it Frankie Edgar?
Frankie Edgar's a safe pick, so because it's cash game, I'd go with Frankie Edgar. GPP, Frankie's supremely talented. And yeah, listen, he's got a couple big knockouts. I mean, smoked out BJ Penn, smoked out Chad Mendez. You can't discredit him. But Jeremy Stephens, come on. I mean, you know, are you going to bleep this? Who the fuck is Jeremy Stephens? The guy is tough. Is who he is. He's very tough. He's very durable. And he's a power puncher. He wants Frankie Edgar to get in the pocket and throw with him. The thing is, Frankie Edgar is not an idiot, and Frankie Edgar is twice as fast. So he's just going to bob in and out of the pocket. He'll land his combinations. He'll be able to get some takedowns. Frankie Edgar probably scores a decent amount of points. Cash game play, though.
All right, so if there was a GPP play at the high end, who would it be?
At the high
end? That you don't have.
That I don't have. Well, you know what? I felt like I looked at most of what
would
is...
Would it be Khabib?
To be perfectly honest with you, I like two picks here, right? Okay. I like Jim Miller over Thiago Alves. Thiago Alves, okay. He used to fight at 170
Jim Miller's
pounds.
Only $7,800.
Yeah. But once again, you got to take a stretch on it. Thiago Alves used to be one of the guy's best ever, but he's not anymore. And he fought George St. Pierre. Well, he fought George St. Pierre. So
what was the last time George St. Pierre was in the UFC?
2014?
It seems like it's been like 10 years.
Well, sometimes it feels like 6 months. Sometimes it feels like this long. What I'm saying is when I really look at it, I think to myself, okay, You got Thiago Alves, who's challenged for the belt at 170 pounds. He's been to the highest level. But as I was saying with George, when you look back on his body of work, it's easy to discredit it because some of the guys ain't doing good anymore. Thiago Alves falls in that category. He's not doing good anymore. So the guy takes a couple years off, Pat. Then he decides, I'm going to come back. He gets a fight with Jordan Mean, and he's getting his ass kicked. He lands a body kick. Jordan Mean goes down. It was a miraculous moment for him because he was inches away from losing, and he gets this win over Jordan Mean. Congratulations, Thiago Alves. So they talk him into a fight with Carlos Condit, and he takes the worst beating a man has ever suffered, right? Like, it's nasty how bad he gets his ass kicked. He gets knocked out. It's like, okay, back to the drawing board. Now he disappears for another year long plus. So he's got multiple things going wrong with him coming into this fight. First thing wrong with him coming into this fight, he hasn't fought in a very long time. And even when he did fight, it's so sporadic. He's had like 3 fights in the last 4 years. Second of all, the guy was known as a juicer, and he's not juiced anymore because it ain't 2008 and he can't get away with it. So as a result, he physically doesn't look the same anymore. And when he fought at 170 pounds, Pat, his biggest issue was he couldn't make the weight. He came in at 171, sorry, that is making weight, 172, 173. He fought Josh Koscheck. People thought he ripped Koscheck off. He fought legendary Matt Hughes, missed weight, and then knocked out Matt Hughes. Not cool, man. But what I'm saying is that he was a big brute. Now he's dropping down to 155 pounds. Why? He's not juicing anymore. So you got a guy that's coming off the sideline. He hasn't been active in a very long time. He's known as this big, big leg kicker. But Jim Miller fights all the time. He's gritty. He's wearing down. But he's a tough guy with a BJJ black belt who's very capable of getting you to the ground, beating you up. On paper, it's, Thiago Alves. Prime Thiago Alves. What prime Thiago Alves? Well, he's going to look good at 155. How do you know? At least we know what we're getting out of Jim Miller. He robbed Joe Lowe's on his last time out as Director A-Rap can attest to because he had money on Joe Lozon. But Jim Miller's a tough, durable guy. And essentially, he's coming in here on short notice for Ally Quinta, and he's looking to take care of business. So I do see him as a possible guy that it's not so much that on paper he's just so much better than Alves, is that there's a lot of big question marks on Alves. The other thing we're going to look at is Tim Kennedy versus Rashad Evans. Tim Kennedy's no slouch. The guy's been off for a little while hunting ISIS, and he was also in that History Channel show, like Hunting Hitler.
He's in it?
He's in it, apparently. He's a former Green Beret. Guy has no fear. He's basically a real American hero. I really like Tim Kennedy. Is that he hasn't been known for his finishing abilities. He's known for his abilities to take in deep waters. He kicked the crap out of Michael Bisping in Quebec City like a year and a half ago. Now Michael Bisping's the champ, and this guy can hardly find fights. Nobody wants to fight him. You do not want to fight him. Now, Rashad Evans is having a similar thing to Thiago Alves. He's a former 205-pound champion, only he can't hang with those guys anymore. He's too small.
You'll say, how long has Rashad Evans been around for?
Well, he won season 2 of The Ultimate Fighter, so 2005. That's a long time. So now he's got a detached retina that he gets fixed. Now he's got a bad knee that he gets fixed. Now his shoulder's hurting him but gets fixed. Now he's kind of moving around gyms a little bit. Now it's like, well, you know what? If one thing is that he's still Rashad Evans, but then Ryan Bader beats him. People are thinking, Ryan Bader beat him. But, well, Bader's good, and Evans is definitely slowing down. Now he takes a secondary fight against Glover Teixeira, and he gets knocked out. And that's something that hadn't happened to old Sugar Rashad in a long time. So now you're thinking, he's got a bad eye, a bad knee, and a bad shoulder. He's getting older. So what does he decide to do? I can't fight 205ers anymore. I'll just go down to 185. You know the difference between 205 pounds and 185 pounds?
I'm going to say it's around 20 pounds. Okay. My math may be off, though.
Okay. And do you know what the difference between 135 and 155 is?
I'm going 20 to pounds. Say it's about 20
That's
pounds.
Two weight classes from 35 to 55. Two weight classes. Rashad is in the worst weight class ever because it's the only weight class that has a 20-pound gap. So now, your old man Rashad, whose eyes bummed out, whose knees bummed out, whose shoulders bummed out, and you're going to cut the extra 20 pounds and fight Tim Kennedy? It's a bad idea, man.
You think Kennedy knocks him out?
No, I think Kennedy gets the decision because Kennedy's not that killer instinct kind of guy. But both guys used to train together at Jackson Winklejohn Gym in Albuquerque, New Mexico, prior to Rashad Evans eventually splitting. And apparently they were friends, and then they got into it.
Pink eye going on there?
I don't know. I must have scratched my retina, Rashad Evans style. But yeah, no, Tim Kennedy said some stuff about him. Rashad was like, I'm really disappointed. But now they're kind of going back and forth. And if Kennedy sees it as, oh, you know what, I was just trying to hype this fight. He's not good at hyping fights. He's not. He's good at being
a crazy person.
He just acts like himself. Love it. When he starts trying to be like Conor and those guys, it's fake. You're not the best trash talker. But I love Tim Kennedy, and I just think that it's not so much, does he win this fight? I think so. Would I play him on a cash game team? I think so. But once again, we're playing it the same way that you look at that Thiago Alves. There's big question marks surrounding Rashad. The weight cut. How's his body hanging out? Where's his chin at? Those are all things that need to be taken into consideration, and would definitely favor towards Tim Kennedy. When I look at Thiago Alves, the same thing. Chin issues, weight cut issues, inactivity issues, plethora of injuries that have been plaguing you since 2006. And Derek Noble almost knocked you out back in the day. Can never come back from that.
All right, let's see the lineup. And usually we do a cash lineup and a GPP lineup, but you only have one lineup.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, certainly when I was looking at it, as we've been talking, I've been thinking,
you can make some changes to it.
I don't know how many changes I will make. I actually like Tim Kennedy the more I was thinking about it.
Read out the six.
Okay, so for the six, we're going to start from highest to lowest. Number one guy, Donald Cerrone. As I mentioned, I think he gets the winner of Calvin Gastelum, $8,900. Stephen Thompson, $8,800. The guy's Wonder Boy. I mean, yep. He can't. Wonder Man at this point is 33, but he's No spring chicken, but he's fighting the best fights of his career. He hasn't taken that damage. He hasn't had those injuries. He's going to dance around Tyron Woodley. And I seen what Nate Marquardt did to Tyron Woodley, and it went pretty. Now we're moving on. We got $8,600. We're going to go with Conor McGregor. It's Conor McGregor.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the guy's a potent finisher. Whether you like him or you don't finish him, his track record and his body of work speaks for itself. Moving on down from that, we've got Rafael Natal taking on Tim Boach. Tim Boach, little guy, getting a little older, but I've seen Tim Boach hit the ground, and just the submission happened so fast. I was like, whoa. Tim Boach's grappling on the ground ain't that good, but his ability to keep the fight standing is good. If Rafa Natal can get the fight to the ground, which is a stretch, but if he can, he puts him away. Vicente Luque, $7,900. This guy is a finisher. He can finish you standing, he can finish you on the ground. If the fight does hit the ground, he'll be looking for your neck. He loves the neck, loves the darts, loves the anaconda. Standing up, he's got a nasty right hook, got a nasty left hook too, and he's just straight with his punches. Doesn't move his head too much. But screw that. I just want him to get into a firefight and get the win anyways, right? I mean, it's going to be tough against Bilal Muhammad, but they will trade the wills, most definitely.
And your boy Yoel.
Yoel Romero. I mean, here's a piece of dynamite. See how long you can hold it for, right? I mean, maybe you're able to put the fuse out and beat the guy, but if it goes off, it's going off right in your face, man.
So what other guy, what other permutations of this lineup would you think you could do?
Who would
be your first drop out of these six?
Well, here's
Romero?
Romero's cheap, and so is Luque. And that was one of the reasons I went with Romero.
Let's say you lose Romero at 7,700, and you throw, for a cash game team, let's say, to start off with.
Yes.
And you put Pennington on it. And Pennington is $7,100, so you save $600. And then you can upgrade to an $8,500 fighter. Is there anyone at $8,500 that you like?
Not really. Overly. I mean, like, Tim Kennedy's $8,700.
Like, if you could get up to Tim Kennedy, that would be the move. Like, would you take Natal off?
Right, but now you're... Yes, because Natal's going to have some risk in
all
it.
Right,
and
so
the riskiest guy in this entire thing outside of Romero is probably Luque, because Bilal Muhammad ain't no joke.
So if you take Natal and Romero off, you can upgrade to Kennedy and afford Pennington if you wanted to.
Yeah, there you go. You could do something like that. My biggest thing is when I looked at the card, I thought to myself, and this is the reason why I played the one team. I said, okay, on a GPP, I need the finishes, okay? Cerrone, Thompson, McGregor. I don't see anything else that really jumps at me. Of course there's
going
to be
more finishes.
Of
course there's going to be. But
those are the ones that jump out at me. So now as a result, I have the three guys I want. Now I have to figure out how to budget my GPP team. So I take Natal because I don't mind him and he can finish. I take Luque because I don't mind him and he can finish. And I take Yoel Romero. I take Yoel Romero because I actually only have $7,700 left, but I don't mind him. Now I think of a cash game team. I think, okay, well, if I took out Yoel Romero, oh, wait, he's 77. He's one of my budget guys anyways. Okay, but maybe I can take... I don't want to save any money at the top end. If Cerrone, Thompson, and McGregor finish, I'm still going to win my cash game teams with this lineup. And if they all finish and my other three guys can finish as well, I'm looking pretty in a GPP. Give me that $150,000 for a $3 bet. This is a great card to have some awesome free rolls on, man. And just like big tournaments. So I'm glad that DK reformatted. It's tougher now, but I'm not worried about that. We did good last time, so let's just keep the momentum rolling, Pat Mayo.
Perfect. And when is the Bucky Beatdown going to come out for 205?
It should be already. Oh, for 205, we're going to do it next week, the Mexico City card, which is obviously last week's card. Clearly, it's already out. But yeah, we're going to get it ASAP. Obviously, this show is a little easier to put up because it doesn't require the amount of viz.
Yeah.
But because Bucky Beatdown will be moving off of television to a full web property, it should be having a quicker turnaround time and not as much segmented. I know people like it to be like an open format, kind of like what a podcast essentially is with the viz. So should be some exciting news coming on the Bookie Beatdown front. But I know fans really like this show as well. And you got goaded into the hour-long episode because they were Twitter bombing you.
They were.
I know.
But this is a big card.
Yeah, and these are great fans that watch this show, man, because they'll take the time to Twitter bomb you, which I've always really appreciated.
All right, Cody Saftik, you can follow him on Twitter, at CJ Saftik, and remember to follow the Bookie Beatdown, at Bookie_Beatdown. You can get the audio podcast or watch the video version up on the Fight Network YouTube page, and I recommend everyone go check that out, because frankly, it's a better show than this one. But, you know, this one really focuses on the daily fantasy side, not just who's going to win. You guys do a quick segment on that, right?
Yeah, at the end. Yeah. But DK doesn't always release prices in time, man.
True.
Real pain in the ass.
They did for this one because they're getting behind it with a lot of big GPPs, and there's just a lot of money to be won this weekend. So good luck to everyone. Enjoy the card. I'm Pat Mayo. I'll see you next time.